valuable at the many premieres, openings of new attractions, and employee recognition dinners where Roy represented the soul of Disney. He was still chairman of feature animation, and the animators revered him. In any event, how could Eisner get rid of him? Eisner reminded them that Disney had a policy that called for the mandatory retirement of directors at the age of 72, with the exception of former chief executives who could stay until 75. Roy would be 73 by the next board meeting. "Of course, we've ignored that rule," Eisner mused in one encounter with Disney executives where he floated the prospect. Indeed, Disney was legendary for not enforcing any mandatory retirement policy. The legendary old men of animation had stayed as long as they liked. John Hench, an Imagineer who helped Walt design Disneyland, was still working until his death at age 95. Lucille Martin, Eisner's secretary who had worked for Walt, was careful never to reveal her age, but must have been in her 80s. Tom Murphy and Ray Watson were both over 72. Some of those who heard the idea discussed it among themselves and then discarded it as too far-fetched to ever happen. Eisner had a tendency to test controversial ideas by dropping them into conversations, and usually they just disappeared. On March 23rd, Miramax dominated the 2003 Academy Awards with three of the nominees for Best Picture: Chicago, Gangs of New York, and The Hours. The musical Chicago won, along with Best Supporting Actress and four other awards, and was a huge box office success, earning $306 million worldwide and rescuing Miramax's fiscal year. Another Oscar winner was the provocative documentary filmmaker Michael Moore for Bowling for Columbine. The glittering success of Chicago masked a multitude of problems between the Weinsteins and Eisner and Disney, a relationship that, at this juncture, both sides agreed was dysfunctional. The Weinsteins were fuming when Disney issued a press release announcing that Disney had garnered 44 Academy Award nominations, failing to mention that 40 of those were for Miramax films. Chafing at the lack of recognition, Bob Weinstein asked Eisner if Disney might consider taking out an ad in the trades congratulating Miramax and the Weinsteins. Eisner rejected the idea, saying that wasn't the Disney way. "We don't want any of our executives to stand out," he said. "Except one," Weinstein thought, though he didn't say so. Paradoxical as it was, considering that Disney owned Miramax, the Weinsteins were convinced that Eisner resented their success and visibility. Despite the huge success of Miramax films like Pulp Fiction, Shakespeare in Love, and Good Will Hunting, the Weinsteins, especially Harvey, were a constant irritant to Disney executives. After Roth's departure, Bob Weinstein refused to deal with the genial Dick Cook, so the brothers reported to Peter Murphy, the head of strategic planning, whom they held in thinly disguised contempt. But their real problem was Eisner and his insistence that they stick to their low-budget, independent agenda for Miramax just when Harvey Weinstein was chafing to make glamorous, big-budget, big-star event films that he felt he'd earned the right to produce. This ongoing contest of wills had only intensified after